in my opinion, the anti-vax movement is really just a rejection of experts in general. I think that the working class people that are on my factory floor are very suspicious of all experts, and they feel like all of them have an agenda, and they feel like the experts look down on them. So it's not just that they have an agenda and so forth. It's also that the experts are up here and I'm down here. And I think the anti-vax movement was just a protest to let the experts know that you're not fooling us. We're not, you know, we're at the same level with you. We're judging what you say.
Welcome to Faith in Each Other. I'll be your host, Jordan Howard. And on this show, I want to dive into the minds and the beliefs from people of all walks of life, baby boomers to millennials. No question is off limits as we learn together and go through the journey together of seeing where we as a society have gone wrong and where we have gotten it right. I believe that our faith in each other can lead us into a beautiful future. Each episode, I will be joined by Reverend David Williams, my pastor, and his good friend Tom Ingram, as we talk through challenges facing our society today and gain an understanding from different perspectives. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. And today we'll be talking about the pandemic. And yeah, we may not have a lot of answers today, but I just want to ask, David, how has the pandemic caused us to have less faith in each other as a society?
Well, Jordan, thanks for bringing us back together. I think my initial thoughts about why has the pandemic made us have less faith in each other is because I think the pandemic, it came upon us all in different ways. I think we all have experienced its impact totally as individuals, not as a group, but individually. And in it, we've all had our own shares of loss. And when you have loss, you know, your loss may not be the same as others. And sometimes when our loss are not the same, I might hold a little contempt for you because I'm going, why don't you feel the pain that I feel? Why don't you feel what I feel? And since you don't have this kind of loss, then I don't really believe that you are empathetic to me. And because of that, then I can begin to broaden my distance with you. And I think the pandemic has been so individualistically a loss ordeal, is that we all are suspicious for each other because we didn't have the same loss. We didn't have the same impact. And those who had similar impact, we gravitated toward each other. And those who had a different impact, we separated ourselves from those people. And so I think that's initially is we experience loss differently. And then it created groups and it created pockets. And I think that's why that is my initial idea of why it has separated us and less faith in each other.
Okay, I appreciate that. Is there any guidance in the Bible that would help, you know, the suffering individual that feels unseen?
Well, see, Jordan, I think the Bible is very clear that any brother or sister who is hurting deserves accurate attention. And I think that's very clear. But as we went along, we kind of wanted to focus on, since I'm hurting, everybody else's hurt is insignificant to mine. And so we became more about my hurt, my pain. And when you did not acknowledge my hurt or my pain or seek to help me feel better, I sought solace in people like me. And so those who again did not have my pain, I counted them suspect. And so the Bible couldn't work its way out, because it always talks about putting others before yourselves. Well, we don't hear putting others before myself when I am the victim. You know, when I'm the victim, when I'm the one who is feeling this pain, I am no longer concerned about someone else's pain. I need to be healed or fixed first. And when I didn't feel like I was getting the help that I needed or deserved, then everyone else became my enemy or my target of frustration.
Absolutely. It's hard to step out of yourself when you're consumed, you know, yourself. Tom, did you have any thoughts on that, how the pandemic has caused less faith in each other as a society?
Yeah, I think that, you know, to my way of thinking, when we started the whole pandemic experience, faith in each other should have been the one of the top priorities for the goals of what we were trying to achieve. That, in other words, if we turned on each other, then our ability to fight the pandemic would be less inherently. So to me, when we got into the pandemic, bringing everybody along and trying to develop a sense of unity and common purpose should have been the highest goal. And I don't think it was a goal at all. I don't think anybody had unity as a goal for the pandemic. I feel like the statement, "I think we should let science decide," I think is an exclusionary statement, that if you don't understand science, then you shouldn't be part of the conversation. So, you know, I think that the approach that we took should have been one of inclusion. And I just don't think that was ever part of the process. If you're an anti-vaxxer, you're a bad person. If you're trying to force me to take a, I mean, it was never a goal. So I don't think it should be a surprise that it ended up that way. But I can tell you that in my heart, I think for a democracy, unity is very important for being able to fight any kind of pandemic.
Absolutely. People fear science as a conspiracy, and the misinformation feeds that fear. And, you know, we were already divided to begin with, before the pandemic started. Personally, I work, you know, in the shipping industry, and my company kept me employed. I was, you know, showing up to the, you know, the office daily. I had to have a printout and put in my windshield stating that I was an essential worker. All the while I am going through these mundane tasks, day in, day out, battling people telling me to take off my mask. I'm stupid for wearing that, and I'm just trying to survive. I have to go to work. If I'm to pay bills and have a roof over my head, I have to go to work. I can't afford to stop going. So I had to put myself at risk. And at the same time, I had to put myself out there to be fed misinformation. I couldn't stand up for myself. I didn't have a voice. I felt very unseen during the pandemic. And, you know, the company just implemented new procedures and new roles and incentives to kind of keep us happy and boost morale. But as soon as we kind of stepped outside of the hotspot of the pandemic, currently those incentives have kind of gone away. We, you know, I still feel unseen. I'm part of the bottom line of the company's growth. And my biggest challenge is, how do I make a company feel accountable, you know, for that? How do I become seen in such a giant corporation during something like this? Because, like I said, I put my life at risk daily, my children's life at risk daily, just to keep, you know, the business open for people to come in and ship non-essential items, which was very challenging for me, because we then had to become policing systems. We had to tell people, you have to wear a mask. We had to kick people out of our store when we hit a capacity limit. And it really put a strain on our customer base. I'm in a small town and I see a lot of the same people. And when I have to be a certain way with these people, it rubs them raw. And I have to maintain that. And then it's like a switch, you know, mask mandate comes up, you know, everybody's not wearing a mask and it's business as usual. And it's like, did we all forget, you know, about what just happened these past 2 years? So that's kind of my situation. You know, life is unstable and the incentives are gone. It's not, you know, they haven't proved that I'm worth it. You know, my life is still in shambles in a sense. And I'm still suffering and I'm still bouncing back. And I was already suffering before as far as, you know, living in today's day and age. So that's a little bit of what I feel about the whole pandemic. And you mentioned, Tom, about the anti-vaxxers. Would you say that it was fear behind the anti-vaxxers as well as the vaxxers that motivated them to spew misinformation?
First of all, I just want to push back a little bit on what you said.
Mm-hmm.
You said that you had to stay working to survive, but that's not really true. You could have taken the unemployment.
I could have taken the unemployment, but that's...
You just chose not to.
I chose not to because I wasn't planning on... Well, one, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know if this was a temporary thing. I work for a great company as far as benefits for my kids. I can't throw that off. You know, I still have to maintain some sort of, you know, foothold on something that it was very hard for me to obtain in the first place, the benefits and all those things, full-time employment. And, you know, coming from, you know, a little bit more poverty-stricken areas, having a job that I have that pays me what I'm paid, I don't want to give that up. I hold that close to my chest. That is a very important piece of who I am. So giving up work to sit at home for an undetermined amount of time wasn't an option for me.
But anyway, to answer your anti-vax question, in my opinion, the anti-vax movement is really just a rejection of experts in general. I think that the working class people that are on my factory floor are very suspicious of all experts, and they feel like all of them have an agenda, and they feel like the experts look down on them. So it's not just that they have an agenda and so forth. It's also that the experts are up here and I'm down here. And I think the anti-vax movement was just a protest to let the experts know that you're not fooling us. We're not, you know, we're at the same level with you. We're judging what you say. But to me, it was a rejection of the expert thing. And to me, it's very similar to the global warming issue, where people deny global warming, even though their own house is, their own city is warmer than it was 20 years ago. And they do that to just let the experts know that we're not going along with your program anymore. We're going to resist. And I think that's what the anti-vaccine, I think that's what the anti-mask thing. And I think that could have been addressed in a way with outreach, but there just wasn't any incentive to do that. The people who were using science as a club, is the way I would put it, reconciling with the people who were actually driving the trucks and feeding the blanks into the machine, that wasn't one of their goals.
Okay. David, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Yeah. I hear Tom's response, but I think there's some things that happened before even there is the suspicion of the higher education and the lower educated. I think we're all products of our environments, and so people who I mean, depends on where you were raised in our country, how diverse that area was, whether it's diverse in education, whether it's socioeconomically a strong or vibrant or a poor context. I think all of these play a role. All of these things have an impact. Your families have an impact on you. You know, your individual families will teach you right there the very your initial social order. It will tell you people you can trust, people you can't trust. You learn that in the early stages of your homes. And so as you grow, then the people who speak into you, you will look and you will see there are certain people who you believe in and trust because your environment created you that way. Your environment kind of pre-taught you. By the time we came to the pandemic, many of us, we just saw our frustrations of how our democracy was hijacked. And it hijacked certain people groups. It hijacked certain ways of thinking, and it fed right into people's ideologies. And so when it did that, it was easy for the division and lack of faith in each other to be spread abroad. And because people were, I think they were very susceptible to certain languages. And so they grabbed those languages. And when somebody said, don't trust the scientists, your environment, you know, it supports that. Don't trust the educator. But we all went to school. We all went to grade school. We all went to some types of high schools. But, you know, many people ended, you know, their education early and they were dropped into factories or they moved to welfare. And so the language of, and I hate to just say the politicians, but the politicians did grab people by their understandings, and they pandered right into them, and they grabbed people, and people just says, hey, they're speaking to me and they're trying to protect me. And so the language of some was saying no mask. It was no mask. But I will say this, even when we say anti-vaxxers, that is a put down. That is another label that we're using. And our nation, and not just these last 2 years, but our nation has been very strong in labels. And so once it puts a label on a people group, people have to decide, am I in that group or am I not in that group? And when we just said anti-vaxxers, whether people are saying, I can't take vaccines, I don't do vaccines. I mean, before the pandemic, I have personal friends who would not vaccine their children. They would not. So they homeschooled their children. And these people were educators. They had such a suspicion for, I don't know what's in the drugs. I don't know what's in the shots. And so we all have been held hostage by as much information, as Tom said, that we can handle. But I think it's been those who seem to benefit best. They've used that as for their own personal growth. They've used it for their own personal advancement. And so they were able to turn around and say, hey, I'm protecting you, you anti-vaxxers. These people are just trying to do this to you. I don't even know if they believed it, but they saw their ideals being promoted. They saw that they're what they were after. And so we had people just to fall in different sides, whether you were a vaxxer or an anti-vaxxer. We automatically labeled it them, us. And that just further alienated, I think, our country. And Tom is right. If we aren't thinking about what's it going to cost us as a nation, if we don't see the what we stand to lose, we won't see each other as helpers. We won't care. I don't care about where you've come from. I don't care about the neighborhood you were raised in. I don't care about if you were rich, because all I know is, again, I'll come back to it. Right now, I'm hurting. Right now, I'm losing something. Something is being taken from me. And because the people group that I've landed in it are telling me, are filling in the gaps, I am giving allegiance to my people group, to my group. And my group is growing with it's spewing out all sorts on both sides. It's spewing out all sorts of stuff. But I think we as a people, we've used the pandemic as an opportunity to further our personal causes. And that has really set America up as a split nation. And it took advantage of people's less education, higher education, trust in the systems, no trust. It just depends on where you land is what we're seeing right now. Yeah.
Appreciate that. There's a blizzard of misinformation out there, and only a snowflake of the truth. People only seek out, you know, the information they agree with, and then often hold, you know, certain categories of people hostage with using their fears. And unfortunately, like we said before, we were kind of already divided as a society before this pandemic, and coming in, it just further amplified that division. Did you have something?
When you say we were further divided before, I think that's, I mean, we've had our division and we've always had our groups. I mean, that's been a part of democracy. You can start grassroots groups and all that. But what I have seen is that we've always had a division. What it is, what I think, people who've never been on the stage ever before are now on the front stages. And that's intoxicating. You know, I think of it as a pastor. When people get in front of a church and they see, if they say the right thing, a whole group of people will say, yay. And that's intoxicating for you to say, wow, man, I got those people to listen to me. And so what I think, Jordan, what has happened is more people who've never, ever been heard for their intelligence or lack of intelligence have finally gotten front page news. And so more and more people are saying, I saw this guy get front page news. I'm going to make a statement to get me some front page news. And the other one says, I'm going to top that one. So I think we have a one up on each other going on, but you are creating followers every time you create your group, because everybody's saying, man, I like what David says. You know, he's saying down with all of the whatever. I've been thinking that too. Now I will buy into, man, I am pretty good. And I think what we're seeing is we're seeing a lot of first time stage actors, and they don't know what to do with these 15 minutes of fame. And so they're spouting anything because it's really not about the truth of what we're saying. It's about the experience of what we're going through.
Okay. One of the things that really struck me about what Jordan was saying, though, is that he was saying that he worked at FedEx all those months interacting with people, handing stuff over the lawn ornaments over the but he felt like, you know, the society, I'm putting words in your mouth, so interrupt whenever you want to, but one of the things I felt like you were saying was that it seemed like the other workers were heroes and you weren't.
Your question is what?
Why we had to have the hero worker in the first place, or why it had to be first responders or anything? Why couldn't it be anybody who, because it should be the way it's supposed to be, is anybody that goes to work ever, thank you, because you're part of the economy, you're helping, you're paying taxes, even if it's not coming out directly out of your check, believe me. So it should always be that. And then during the pandemic, should have been times five. But why did we do the some workers are heroes and the other guys, we don't want you to feel good about yourself? Why did we do that? Because that was totally enforced. It wasn't scientific, and it wasn't necessary to defeat the pandemic. So why did we get involved in that?
Yeah, that's actually kind of very true of how I feel. Honestly, I feel like it shouldn't have even been brought up. Everybody understands that healthcare workers are always putting their lives at risk. That's kind of what they signed up for. They sign an oath for that. You know, I didn't sign an oath working for FedEx to ensure the safety of my customers and non-transmission of a pandemic. You know, I didn't sign up for that. So I feel like the people that aren't necessarily in the healthcare world kind of had to step their game up even further. You know, we had to be more mindful of our hand washing. Not all of us are trained on that, or our personal protective equipment, making sure everything is, you know, clean and sanitized. It's interesting how, you know, I work with some of my friends and my coworkers, and some before just didn't understand what sanitized was versus clean. You know, something can be clean but not sanitized. So they don't. I feel like the whole world bringing the attention to just one industry kind of left us out. And that's one of those things of how the company can make me feel better is making me feel heard, be seen, you know, not the fame. I don't need a 15 seconds of fame. I feel like there's something that could be given in a way of, you know, appreciation of the sacrifice I put out there to keep their business alive, you know.
Jordan, I would tend to say, why did they choose the healthcare industry? I think it was opportunity. You know, we've always been a country where we will find a superstar group. You know, we are just a superstar country. You know, we even all of our award banquets to the best country singer, not country singers. This is the best country singer. This is the best NBA player. This is the best symphony. This is the best. So we are automatically good at creating our heroes. And when we create our heroes, we know we're only singing to a portion of the public. And so what can happen, though, is whatever people group that I choose to, if I got enough power, that I choose to highlight, I'm going to get other supporters to come alongside me. And it's going to, again, it's going to heighten my intelligence. It's going to heighten my personal people group. And it's not that there are not other good people in other categories. It's just that that's what we as a people pander to. You were just important as the bus driver. You know, nobody said we got to go out and thank all of the RTA bus drivers. We didn't go there. Nobody said we got to thank all the sanitation workers. Nobody went there. We didn't go. We only took one. And then everybody who said the people that I got to thank are the medical professions, which if we were grateful for them. But we bought into a myth. We bought into them, and we're fast at buying into myths. Because when we do it, it makes us feel good. And everybody now will get on the wagon and say, you know, I helped I thank every nurse that I have. Me and Tom sometimes will thank. You say this often. What happens when we say, and we want to thank a vet? We want to thank a veteran, you know, because basically what it says, if you don't thank all the veterans, you must be un-American. You know, and if you don't like veterans, if you don't stand up for the soldiers, it's again, to me, it's a myth, and it only separates us. It does not bring us closer. So it wasn't that your company overlooked you. Your company was not in the established people group that was declared the true heroes. So they didn't overlook you, but they overlook. I mean, our companies overlook thousands of people in industries that they could. If you're going to say it about one, you need to say it about them. But that's not how we think. If I say thank all the veterans, now I can just go back and get all of my friends who have thanked the veteran, who wear a camouflage hat, who, you know, put a gun on their T-shirt. Those are the good people. And me as a politician, I'm going to benefit off of that. And so you were not overlooked. All of the rest of America was overlooked. And I'm going, I want you to think bigger than that. Your company made money because of you. You personally helped many. You just did not get the accolades, but a lot of people didn't get the accolades. It's because that's not how we do in this country. We will say, we will choose a people group and say they are the good ones. And then does that mean anybody else in that group is not? But that's what keeps us divided. We keep saying, I'm going to find a group that will fit my personality, that will fit my agenda, and I'm going to label them as the best ones. And then people will come along because they said, well, Dave speaks the truth. And so Dave must be right because he picked all the funeral directors, all the people who died and are buried. Those are the good ones. So I just say to you, my brother, is that your efforts were highly needed, but you are part of the unsung heroes that America has constantly. We just believe in superstars. And if you're not a superstar, then we have no need for you because you won't help my own personal agenda.
Absolutely. Kind of a quick question. How did Jesus bring together divided groups? Is there any kind of lesson to be learned that faith?
Jesus was constantly finding those who were most rejected. Let me give you one in particular. It is the parable of the leopards. You know, Jesus knew the leopards were the most disgusted, most looked down on people in the society. Matter of fact, they build a neighborhood for you to live in outside of regular society. And Jesus decided to go around, I'm going to begin to talk to these people. I'm actually going to heal them. I'm actually going to touch them. And the world and the community thought Jesus was totally nuts because he's going outside the law. The woman at the well caught in adultery. Jesus could have easily said to her, you know, ma'am, you know, I can't do anything for you. You are already a marked woman. But Jesus didn't. He says, you are important to me, and I can bring about a new way of looking at you from all of my followers when they see me interacting with you. Jesus constantly found his way to those who were most rejects, to those who were most outcast, but Jesus says he had to bring them back into the mainstream. But that was some education that the high flying and the most honored people found strange. And Jesus that's why his kingdom was so at odds with Rome. Rome says we have a system that we take advantage of people. And Jesus is bringing in a system that says, no, you honor people. And so there was a clash. So I definitely see that was Jesus's way of saying, no, everybody has true value.
Yeah, Tom, kind of a two-part question for you. Do you see division among your workers, and how does your company bring together divided groups?
So I see that all the time. We have an office type staff, engineers, stuff like that. They tend to be pretty liberal. And then we have the people on the floor. And like I told Dave, the guys on the floor look like the Army of Northern Virginia down there with their beards and stuff like that. And so there's a conflict between them all the time. Yeah. And then the conflict is It's very similar to the pandemic one, where it's, if you don't understand science, then you shouldn't be part of the conversation, right? Science should rule. If you don't get it, then you shouldn't be part of the conversation. Well, in my company, the people who get it are the Army and Northern Virginia guys, because they're out there working on it. So they actually know what happened. And they have to tell the engineers so the engineers can make the product better, which is kind of where I come in. That's what I want, right? And they don't want to do that. Because, and I can tell you, I'm the best at going and fixing things out in the field, the best. And the way I do it, right, is I ask the people on the line what's wrong, and they tell me, okay? It's all in the way you ask. If you approach it as I'm your equal and I need your help, and if you could help me, I'd really appreciate it, even though you're a line worker and I'm a business owner, they'll tell you like that. But if you don't take that approach of equality, they'll cut you off the same way that the people did when it's like science should decide. It's like, okay, we're out of the conversation. I know what's wrong. I could fix your conveyor today. I could tell you in two sentences.
Active listening, yeah.
So, yeah, no, we face the division that we see in our country is a huge part of what we do in our bit. It's very divided. It limits the ability of the company to operate, the division that we have in the country. It reflects right across. And I think that the only way you can do it is through outreach, where you try to engage the people. And then you let them know that, in my opinion, in management, we got engineers and we got factory workers, and we're a team. And your importance to the company, in my opinion, is as important as theirs. I really believe in my heart that if you do active outreach like that, people love it. I look at our political situation right now, and I think the Democrats will say, if I reach out to the Republicans and reach my hand, they will slap it away, and vice versa. But I just don't think that's life. I think that if you reach out to people in a sincere way, that you can achieve just fantastic results. But yeah, no, my company is divided the same way the country is, and that's one of our biggest management problems. So, and it's not perfect. We still have it there. Absolutely. It's still there.
Yeah, it's that active listening and humbling yourself and truly caring that makes them really feel seen. And I see that even in my line of work. It just makes everything go easier when you're no better than them and you just are trying to solve a common goal together, you know, and most people fall more towards the middle and, you know, and can find that common ground if it just takes that, like you said, that reaching out and that faith that the other person will do the right thing and reach back out and meet you in the middle. And we need to figure out how we can rebuild that faith in each other. Especially with this pandemic, because we have such an amazing society, and it can be so much better if we can somehow regain that faith that's been destroyed and even further destroyed through the pandemic. So I feel like, you know, that's about as much time. I don't know, Seth, at the top of the hour. It's 3 now. Do we wrap it up?
Well, Jordan, before you close this very needed discussion, so I think Tom, his company does create a window that we could look into. What Tom is talking about is people have to take a risk. You know, Tom, when you said that, you know, when you go out to fix a problem in a company, you don't mind asking the guy on the floor who built the equipment, what's his take on a problem you're going to deal with? You had to take a risk to do that. You could come out of your head office going, I'm president, I'm the CEO, I'm owner, or however you want to, you know, you want to frame it. And you can go to the company and just go, I know about everything in this company. Or before you go out to this company and to look at their line, you have to take a risk. And I think today that's where we are. We have to take a risk to talk with people who didn't come from my neighborhood. Tom didn't come from my neighborhood, nor did I come from Tom's neighborhood. I didn't come from Tom's experiences, nor did Tom come from my experiences. But you have to take this risk that there is something together we are better for. And right now, our division is built on, we will not take any risk of getting to know someone who is different from me, who has different gifts or qualities or experiences. And so America is still saying, if we don't have faith in each other, because if you got faith, then come get in my group and reaffirm what you already know. And I'm going, we've got to stop that. It's not, I must reaffirm. It is, I might need to get to know a Muslim, even though I'm a Christian. I might need to know a Jew, but I'm a Christian. I mean, I might need to know a non-believer, an atheist. I need to know these people without fear that they're going to convert me, but they might share something that might make my community, my neighborhood, my country better as a democratic place. And so that means we've got to take risk at coming out of what we already know and possibly learn something we've never known before.
I like that a lot. Thank you. Thank you, Pastor Dave.
Democracy is faith in each other. That's what it is. It's all based on that. Yes, and we've lost it, and we got to fight back.
Take the risk.
And I appreciate both of you guys.
Great time to talk about it. Thanks for making me feel seen. Yes.
No, the people on my factory floor felt exactly the same way. You know, that they were working, all these other people were taking time off. But they had they had someone that they could talk to that could give them real, real assurance that, hey, we're going to remember. We're not going to forget. And I think that's why the smaller companies are so much stronger than the big corporations, because the big corporations just really can't, they really struggle with doing anything like that.
Yeah, I'm lucky. I feel like my store, even being in a big corporation, is more like a small local business. Like, everybody knows us, everybody expects us to be the same way. And my management, I give them nothing but accolades. They kept us, you know, very safe and took care of us. Them on the local level, absolutely. They took care of me and made me feel seen. But, you know, that grander, bigger picture is kind of where I'm trying to poke and prod at.
Well, our company couldn't exist without FedEx. We use FedEx all the time. We appreciate your work. And I got to tell you, Jordan, I appreciate you going to work during that pandemic.
I appreciate you, Tom.
I think you're a hero. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in this conversation. We'll see you next week on Faith in Each Other.
Thank you so much for listening to Faith in Each Other. I hope today's conversation encourages you in your journey to have hard conversations, and most importantly, to listen to others around you. If we are going to have faith in each other, I believe we need to be willing to have hard conversations, and that is what we aim to do on this show. We will see you next time on Faith in Each Other. If you enjoyed this show, please share it with someone you know. See you next time.